It had cooled off considerably by the time I had reached the apartment rental I had snagged in Shibuya, and it had been a long day exploring the vast metropolis that is Tokyo. I had taken a quick shower, and as I texted my friends to figure out where we should go for drinks, there was a knock at the window. At first, I thought that maybe a bird had accidentally hit the window. After all, I was on the 7th floor. And then the knocking came again, a dull, thudding sound against the window. I hesitantly got up and inched towards the curtains, when suddenly, I heard the glass crack, and I backed up. The glass finally gave way, and a woman's head flew into the room. The head hovered in midair, severed cleanly around her throat as if beheaded by a laser. The head had long flowing black hair, pale skin, and purple lips, which parted enough to show sharp canines. Her blood-red eyes glared at me, and blood seeped from her forehead. The flying head suddenly came right at me, and I swung wildly and managed to bat the head away. It hit the wall, rolled a bit, and then rose again. It attacked again, and I tried to duck under it, but it changed trajectory, and I felt the head bite into my shoulder. I screamed and lunged into the wall, and I felt a chunk of skin tear as the head was dislodged. I grabbed at the head, a fistful of hair in my fingers, and I swung wildly, the head smacking against the floor. I grabbed the head with my other hand, managing to grab hair and an ear, and I turned the head towards me, careful to stay away from the bloodied fangs trying to bite me. "What are you?" I asked. The head spit my own blood back at me and said, "My name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast." In Japanese mythology, the Nukekubi are people, usually women, who have been cursed. While they are normal women during the day, when they sleep, their heads detach from their bodies and fly around trying to bite people to drink their blood. The Nukekubi myth is described in writing as early as the 17th century, and interestingly enough, are actually a subset and the originator of a larger myth of creatures known as Rokuro-kubi, in which the cursed people's necks elongate like a snake of epic proportions. Many early illustrations of the Rokuro-kubi have the necks twisting and turning at a length of 2 to 3 times the length of their bodies. So if you thought Henrietta's weird gooseneck form in Evil Dead 2 was bad, the Rokuro-kubi would put that to shame. Most stories have the women waking up with no memory of what their heads did the night prior, and no memory of them feasting on the blood of others. Although that might be seen as a blessing considering that you've already been cursed, and cursed pretty heavily as well. There are suggestions that the basis of this myth is sleepwalking. As the neck elongation of a Rokuro-kubi as well as the head detachment of the Nukekubi both happen when the host is sleeping. This sort of makes sense to me, and further support is that in some stories there are regions, entire villages, in fact, that are populated by people who are Rokuro-kubi, which implies some sort of genetic tie. While in real life, sleepwalking has actually been shown to have a much greater chance of occurring if one's parents have struggled with sleepwalking as well. And one interesting point of lore, and the tie into today's theme, is around the Nukekubi's weakness, which is their bodies. While their head is flying around, the headless body just lays wherever they left it, and if you manage to find and move the body, the head won't be able to find it and will die if it cannot reattach itself. So you have these incredibly mobile flying vampire heads, who at the end of the day need the structure that their full bodies provide. And today, I want to talk about the need for all of us to have a little structure in our lives. I'm the type to bristle at authoritarianism, or being expected to do something just because I'm told to do it. I absolutely hate doing things I don't want to do, and I love to follow my impulses. So the idea of structure might seem little funny coming from someone with my personality, but while I don't like structure, I also recognize that it is incredibly helpful in me not completely going insane and allowing me to function in society. And I don't think that I'm really alone. I think we all have different tolerances for structures and systems, but at the end of the day, we are all messy, imperfect human beings. We're really just evolved apes, and so much of our body runs on autopilot systems developed before we had spoken speech and the ability to build computers. So it makes sense that we need structures to keep ourselves in check, and this is why I think it's imperative that we learn to build systems that help us out. And I used to be the type of person who found great value in doing things himself. Whether that was carrying something that was heavy by myself, or putting together IKEA furniture without help, or looking at the directions, there was a certain unevolved pride I got from doing things without the help of other people. I think honestly it was mainly ego and wanting to prove my worth mixed with the selfishness of not wanting to share credit. But this is total ridiculousness, believe me. The idea of doing anything yourself is just one huge fallacy, because no one ever does anything by themselves. Oh, did you win that marathon? Oh, did you design, fabricate, and sew those running shoes that you used? Or your clothes? Oh, I'm sure you organized the marathon as well and built the companies that sponsored it too. And of course, you created all the people who you competed against, and you grew your food, built and piloted the plane that took you to the event, and of course, refined the fuel that you personally pumped out of the ground using tools that you invented and built yourself that have been smithed by the ore that you mined using the tools that you invented that you got from, you know, and the list goes on and on and on, right? We live in a highly interconnected world, where there is a good chance that the very clothes you're wearing right now have literally been in multiple countries before arriving in your dresser. Living life where we don't all need to be able to do everything is actually pretty smart, right? It's the divide and conquer of labor and manufacturing. I am now very glad I don't need to know how to grow cotton or sew. And I can even have shirts delivered to me through the mail without ever having to leave my home. So given that it's ridiculous to try and do everything oneself, why not rely on systems to help make life easier? And systems are the organization of tasks, frameworks, habits, and pretty much any other structure that helps us do better. A system might be as simple as having a post-it note on your computer monitor to remember something, or having a daily checkoff list to help you focus. It could be some fancy automation that you coded, or an accountability group, or a gamified app like Duolingo that reminds you to study a new language every day. Building these systems can take an initial investment in time, but at the end of the day, you are solving for larger, reoccurring problems that often affect other things as well. Something key to understand here is that systemic issues, by nature, are things that affect the system. And when we're looking at personal development, and in this case, really bettering ourselves, our life is a system. So in that case, it can really pay to build out the support structures you need in order to optimize the system that you're in and solve for the big challenges that are affecting multiple aspects of your life. So, for example, perhaps you're fully vaccinated and you'd like to travel more, but your budget is on the tight side. Well, you could try and make more money through a raise or a promotion, but your performance at work hasn't been the best, mainly because you're always exhausted from staying up late because you have trouble falling asleep. So if you can create a system that would help you get to sleep better, I would imagine that would also solve for the fatigue, allowing you to perform better at work and qualify for that promotion or raise. But the thing is that not only would it increase your ability to travel financially, you'd also probably be creating more opportunities for yourself. Maybe that promotion would also allow you to travel more for events for work, or it might give you the boost in confidence that would affect somewhere else in your life that you're trying to improve. By improving on structural issues, you're building a stronger foundation that allows for more innovation, more creativity, and more speed at improving the things in your life that you want to improve. So how do you actually go about thinking about structural change? Really, it's first getting clear on three things: what outcomes you want, what's stopping you, and what type of motivation you respond best to. First, you need to figure out what it is you want. What outcome are you looking for? Is it writing a book, or starting your own business, getting a raise, finding true love? Whatever it is, you need to figure out the ideal outcome. Secondly, you need to figure out all of the things that are stopping you. And by all of the things, I mean all of the things. And admittedly, this is probably the most difficult and lengthy part of it all. And I recommend organizing things into two categories: internal and external challenges. Internal challenges are things like, I'm scared no one will buy my book when I write it, or I don't think I'm a good enough writer to write a book. Internal challenges are the fear, the trauma, the self-doubt, all of the inner monsters that rise up that are getting in your way. It might also be behavioral things like, I'm just too tired to write the book after work, or, but I really love playing video games and watching Netflix. And this is the time to dig deep and look at everything and remind yourself that this isn't about judgment. Because it will be tempting to list things and then use them, especially in this category, as justification to avoid doing the work to get your outcome you identified in the first part of this process. But remember, there is no good, bad, or ugly. They are just the challenges that you are personally facing. The external challenges are things like, I work 3 jobs so I don't have time to write a book, or I don't own a computer to type out a book. These are challenges that aren't really based in your own head and usually involve other people or physical things or other concrete boundaries that are difficult to figure out. Thirdly, once you have all of your internal and external challenges, it is now about working backwards from all of those challenges and using either positive or negative reinforcements to create the systems and structures that will help you overcome those challenges. If you are someone who needs the looming stick to motivate them, think about canceling your Netflix account or having a friend hold on to your Xbox. Maybe it's looking for a new, higher-paying job to replace having to work 3 jobs. Maybe it's about committing to writing a book by putting pen onto paper if you can't afford a computer. Regardless, you want to brainstorm solutions to each challenge, and it's cool and even encouraged if you come up with multiple options that would solve each individual challenge and work for you. And so once you have all of this written down, you can then begin to look for the single structure or obstacle that you can start solving for that will help everything else run smoother. And you're ideally looking for a solution that solves that big issue and also might solve other problems down the line. Perhaps it's canceling Netflix, and if that would open up an extra hour or so to give you the energy to look for a new job, so you could then quit at least one of the other jobs, which would allow you to get more rest so you have the energy to write, it would also solve the problem of being lured by the distraction of binging Stranger Things for the 3rd time. And I know this sounds really simple, but really, by isolating and solving for these structural issues, you make all the other issues in your life much easier to handle. So, by figuring out what you want, acknowledging and identifying the challenges, and then solving for as many of them at the same time, you can build the resilient systems that you need to help you overcome the messy imperfections of humankind and get you the support you need to make the outcomes you're searching for a reality. You have the formula to drastically change your life through making some structural changes. So what are you going to do with it? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a monstrous day.